Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On June 30th, 2020, the Supreme Court released its decision in United States Patent and Trademark Office versus Booking.com. In an 8-1 decision, the court upheld the ruling of the lower court, which found that Booking.com is not a generic term and is thus eligible for trademark protection. Justice Ginsburg wrote the majority opinion for the court, writing that a website styled generic.com does not qualify it for federal trademark protection if the term has meaning to consumers. However, because Booking.com does not necessarily signify to consumers an online hotel reservation service, it is therefore not a generic term and qualifies for protection. Justice Sotomayor authored a concurring opinion, and Justice Breyer dissented. Joining us today to discuss this case and its implications is Sui Rosen, visiting scholar and professional lecturer in law at George Washington University's School of Law.
The court recently decided the decision in Booking.com, in which, and I should give a precise title, it's United States Patent and Trademark Office versus Booking.com. And this is a case involving whether or not you can get a trademark in a generic word with a top-level domain, for instance, .com, appended to it. So trademarks protect goodwill in a brand and they protect the customers and consumer public by allowing them to identify a source of goods. So they basically allow a brand to develop a property interest in how it's perceived by the public and allows the public to say, oh, that brand I know has come from here. Makes sense. And there's five basic types of trademarks. There's generic marks, descriptive marks, suggestive marks, arbitrary marks, and fanciful marks. And which of these buckets really depends how the trademark is going to be evaluated for whether or not it'll be protected by law. Generic marks per se are not protected by trademark law because generic marks don't really describe a product. They describe a class of products. For instance, you can't get a trademark for soda for a carbonated soft drink that's flavored because soda is a class of goods, not the good. On the other hand, a descriptive mark, for instance, let's say fizzy bubbles might be. It describes a product, but it's not the only way to describe it. And so it can be protected by trademark law if you show secondary meaning. In other words, you show that the public understands fizzy bubbles to mean this brand of soda and not describing the soda. On the other hand, suggestive, arbitrary, and fanciful marks are all inherently distinctive. In other words, they are not in any way – they don't describe a product and they aren't what a product is. They're simply a brand name that is used to denote a product and the public wouldn't understand it any other way naturally. And so the court – and the question here was Booking.com. Everyone agrees that Booking is generic, including Booking.com. Agrees that it's generic, the word itself, for services booking travel. And the question is, okay, well, Booking.com, is that generic or is that descriptive? And the Patent and Trademark Office ruled that this was because booking is generic, appending .com to it makes it generic as well. You know, and that adding a suffix like .com or companies does not affect the status of a word, whether or not it is generic. And this went up, it went to the district court, and the district court held that there was no per se rule about a generic plus a top-level domain extension. The court held that Booking.com could be registered if it can show that the public recognized it as being inherently distinctive. went up to the Court of Appeals and had the same sort of, and basically the same reaction where they held the same way. And it went to the Supreme Court. And at the Supreme Court, the court agreed. They said there is no per se rule against a generic term plus a top-level domain being a descriptive mark. So whereas booking company likely couldn't be registered because it's a generic term plus company, booking.com can be registered potentially if booking.com can show general public says, oh, booking.com, it's a trademark. Now, I should know that's not the same thing as having a domain name. You can have a domain name, and the domain name may not be your trademark. For instance, AmericanExpress.com, where the website AmericanExpress.com, but the trademark is American Express, not AmericanExpress.com. And if they wanted to register, well, that might be a bad example because the public recognized American Express as being a arbitrary mark, but likely maybe suggestive for a credit card. But in a case of a word that's descriptive of what a business does, like American Airlines, the trademark is American Airlines, not AmericanAirlines.com. Although people might say because, oh, we also associate AmericanAirlines.com. It depends entirely on the public. So this goes back to a very old case from 1888, the Goodyear rubber case. And in that case, it was the Goodyear rubber glove company versus the Goodyear rubber company. And the Goodyear Rubber Company sued, saying that they were violating their trademark in their name. And the court held that because Goodyear Rubber was a generic term for a process for producing rubber, Goodyear Rubber Company was also generic because there was no other way to describe a company that was using that was making Goodyear rubber products. You needed something additional to it to make it a trademark. Goodyear Rubber Company in and of itself was not a valid trademark. And the court says, well, yes, that was one thing. But here we say that Goodyear means that if a public would – this is the court reading of Goodyear – that if a public would understand a term as generic with a word added, then it is still generic. But if a public would understand it, a generic term plus a domain name added as not being generic but instead applying to a specific business – and it is, in fact, denoting the source of goods and services. So the majority looks at sort of what is, you know, and the majority accuses the government of sort of downplaying this and saying, well, the fact that domain names only point to one business are not material. But the court finds it quite material that because, unlike company, it doesn't really change the way the word works. It's still sort of, you know, rubber and rubber company, one describes a product, one describes a company for that product in a generic sort of way. Whereas GoodyearRubber.com, for instance, you would say, oh, that can only go one place. And you say, oh, GoodyearRubber.com is going to take me to the homepage of a Goodyear rubber company. And even if a Goodyear rubber company can't get a trademark of its name because that's generic, the general public will understand GoodyearRubber.com as going to a specific domain name that's owned by the Goodyear Rubber Company. And accordingly, the general public is going to say, okay, I can follow that. So this doesn't mean that all generic.com domains are necessarily going to register for copyrights. So just for instance, a website for, say, beauty.com for beauty products. The question isn't, oh, it's a .com. It can only go one place. It must be a trademark. Instead, it's to be treated as a descriptive trademark. And then on applying for a trademark, you're going to have to show the Patent and Trademark Office evidence that the general public regards your domain name trademark as as being a mark for your business and not just a general trademark for basically, and not just a domain name for a type of services. So if it's just a trademark for a type of services, it's going to be generic. And more to say, if the general public understands it as a domain name for a type of services, it's generic. If the general public understands it as being a domain name for your services, then it I should actually amend. If General Public understands it as a domain name for a type of services, it's actually going to be descriptive under this decision, most likely. And the question will become whether or not it's going to be registered as, for having a secondary meaning in the public. It'll only have secondary meaning in the public if the public understands it as being your trademark, as opposed to just a trademark for your type of services. So there is some underlying concern about what this is going to matter for enforcement and lawsuits. There were some murmurs around this case of Booking.com trying to use its registration to prevent other people from having the word booking in their domain name, for instance. And the court and the majority essentially brushes this off. The court, well, they treat it for a few pages, but they say, ultimately, this is only going to be a descriptive mark at any point because it's a generic word plus a .com, so the general public can understand it as denoting your goods and services. But it still will only, it'll be weak. It will only allow you to – it is going to have a descriptive mark is going to have a weaker zone of protection regarding similar marks. So it's not going to allow you necessarily – sue everyone who has a vaguely similar trademark. It only is only going to allow you to sue people who are doing things like cyber squatting, and it's not going to give you necessarily a wide berth in terms of suing other people with similar trademarks. What that'll mean in practice is hard to see, but we'll have to find out. And that's essentially the majority. It's a fairly simple. The court says we are not faced with a decision of whether Booking.com is a trademark, or rather is. A can be registered for trademark under patent office rules in terms of whether or not it has inherently distinctive or anything like that. All the court says is that there is no per se rule that a generic term with a top level domain plus .com appended cannot be registered. So there is no per se rule, and such registrations can be made if you otherwise meet the hurdles of registering a descriptive mark, which is showing evidence of secondary meaning to the public. So There's a concurrence by Justice Sotomayor. It's very brief. And what she says, and Ms. Wolf majority says too, is that surveys are not the only way of understanding what a term means to the general public. And so, you know, sort of a warning from the court not to focus solely on surveys. In practice, though, you have to think surveys are going to remain important. We haven't yet figured out a much better way to determine whether or not a term is generic. And as a result, I suspect despite this warning, surveys are going to be treated heavily, but I'm sure a patent and trademark office is also going to say, okay, we have to, you know, give us something besides survey evidence. Like you can show advertising budget, you can show a couple of ways. And if all you're doing is using your sort of name as your trademark, and then your website is your trademark plus a top-level domain, if you don't show that you are using it as a trademark of a court, then the PTO might say, well, all you've shown us is that your name is your trademark, is that your trademark is your trademark, and not your trademark plus a domain name to be a trademark. And Booking.com, of course, for a trademark actually is Booking.com. It's not just Booking. And as a result, that doubtless is going to influence how the mark is treated. And so she also emphasizes that the court did not address whether or not Booking.com can be registered itself. It only says there's no per se rule against it. The dissent by Justice Breyer, who folks might know, was really one of the only IP professor before he joined the bench, wrote a famous article on copyright law, a tenure piece for Harvard many years ago. And he attacks this on two basic grounds. His first ground of attack is doctrinal. He says it's a fundamental rule that generic marks can't be registered. And part of this is because of consumer protection. Say, hey, if a mark is generic and only denotes a class of products, adding company or .com or whatever cannot make it non-generic. A generic word is born generic and it'll die generic, so to speak. There is no way to revive a generic mark. Once a mark becomes generic, that's it. And you can't somehow make it non-generic by appending a top-level domain or company or other sort of word, but just denotes as an internet site. And this is basically sort of the classical doctrine about registration, which goes back to the Goodyear case, which the court, you know, the court can say whether or not it's really rejecting Goodyear or not, but it's certainly a pushback against Goodyear. I think there was, you know, the Goodyear rubber case is a very old case. It deals with the 1881 Trademark Act, which only applied for commerce with foreign nations. It didn't even protect trademarks used only in interstate commerce at the time. And I do think this is a court, whether or not they admit it, shifting a little bit on what the rules are for generics with something else appended. So is Goodyear still good law for a generic plus company? I think the majority says, oh, no, we're just distinguishing it. But I don't know exactly if that's the case. Can you get a generic word and trademark it, well, and register for trademark law with the Patent and Trademark Office by appending company to, or LLC or what have you, to a generic mark? I can't tell you 100% no after a decision, although I think the most literal decision reading this case is to say, well, how domains are different because the general public understands them as pointing to only one place on the internet. The other reason Justice Breyer points to for not allowing generic marks to be registered if there is a, you know, regardless of whether or not there's a top-level domain attached to it or not, is about unfair competition. And there's not a lot of discussion of a competition angle in the majority. And this gets back to a whole debate about what trademark law is really about. Is it about protecting the public, or is it about deal in competition and preventing people from stealing goodwill associated with a brand? And this is a very long-standing debate. There's a lot of scholarship on this. A lot of scholarship generally showing that early trademark law, certainly at the time of Goodyear, was very concerned about unfair competition. And that consumer protection really only enters the picture in the 20th century. But regardless, I mean, it's certainly part of it by now, part of trademark law by now. And if you have if you look at it from as trademark just being about consumer protection, you're perhaps less concerned about a generic.com mark. You're like, oh, well, general public understands that's going to go to a certain website. And we understand that that's going to, you know, refer to this company and not generically. If you look at it in terms of unfair competition, you know, there's a worry about allowing generic terms for a class of services to effectively be monopolized by one mark owner who has a .com. And that, you know, that's been always been a big part of a generic rule in terms of unfair competition, preventing people from allowing an unfair advantage on their competitors by monopolizing the name for the class of goods and services. And that is essentially the gist of the dissent. I'd say this violates the doctrine, you know, consumer protection and also on unfair competition. But the majority really is focused on unfair on the public and recognition of a mark by the public. And it's really sort of a more modern view, perhaps, as opposed to sort of a more classical view of the dissent.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.